Hey, Lulu here. Whether we are romping through science, music, politics, technology, or feelings, we seek to leave you seeing the world anew. Radiolab adventures right on the edge of what we think we know, wherever you get podcasts.
A man-made disaster 9 years ago, the world went up in flames in Texas City, Texas.
There was nothing you could recognize, nothing. Everything was just torn to bits. It was probably outside the military, the worst thing you'll ever see. It was hell on earth.
The 2005 Texas City refinery disaster portrayed in that documentary excerpt, it was at a BP facility formerly owned by Amoco. It killed 15 people, injured 170 others, including members of that victim's family speaking there. There were criminal violations. People's lives in this oil town were shattered. And inside BP, a young corporate officer made a disturbing personal discovery about her job.
Looking back on that time, I realized that I fell into a number of common traps. So I was working on human rights at BP, but I think there's a common misperception that human rights is something that we talk about developing countries. It's about dictatorships and repressive regimes. It's certainly not something that happens in the U.S. with unionized workforces. So I think that that was a real mistake. Obviously, looking back, I realize I could have tried harder to engage more senior people across the company. And I'm trying to strike a balance between really blaming myself or giving myself too much credit for what I might have been able to do, because who knows?
The voice of Christine Bader, a former employee of BP, tasked to make sure that the oil company was considering community values in its building and safety policies. Sometimes she succeeded, sometimes she failed. Her story of trying to be an activist for moral and social responsibility both inside and outside the corporate world is told in her new book, The Evolution of a Corporate Idealist, When Girl Meets Oil. Bader says even though she wishes that oil companies could better anticipate the consequences of their actions, she says companies do respond to disasters.
Think of iconic, bad, disastrous corporate situations. And what comes to mind first? Shell in Nigeria. There was another similar situation where ExxonMobil in Aceh, their liquefied natural gas plant, had to shut down for 4 months. I couldn't find an exact estimate, but I found a number of different estimates that talked about how much that cost the company. It was anywhere from $100 to $350 million. These are serious impacts on the company. So companies would do well to be proactive to try to prevent some of these things from happening in the first place.
Why did you decide to write a manifesto for a corporate officer for social responsibility? Is that something that you culled together from a lot of conversations with members of this informal army, or is this a personal mission?
It's a little bit of both. One of my favorite quotes in the book is from Dave Stangus, who's the vice president for sustainability at Campbell's Soup. And he used to work at Intel Corporation. And he said, those of us who have been doing this work for a while, we used to think we needed to evangelize. We used to think, if we could just get everybody to think like us, to embrace sustainability and see the world our way. And he said, we've realized that just doesn't work anymore. So when he came into Campbell's, his CEO said, okay, let's jot down our big goals on the back of a napkin and then we'll announce them to everybody and then you work with everybody to implement them. And Dave said, they're going to hate me if we do that, and it's not going to work. Give me some time. Let me go around and meet all the department heads, listen to what motivates them, what drives them, what they're measured on, and then we can think about how what we want to get done supports what they do, and then they'll own it, and then they'll implement it, which is what has happened.
Is there a sort of cultural identifier for people like you inside a corporation where you walk by and go, oh, that's the responsibility person? Yeah, kind of preachy. Where's the sensible shoes, you know, that sort of thing.
There's a little bit of that. But I think that's part of the challenge is that inside the company, some people see you as a hidden activist. Outside of the company, you're seen as shilling for the man. So I think that part of the challenge, part of the balance is that inside the company, sure, you want to be seen as promoting these beliefs. And why should you have to hide that? But you do need to do this translation job of figuring out how it supports the business.
One of the elements of your manifesto seems really wise to me, and I'm curious as to how you figured this out. You say that if what you're doing depends on a leadership change, a shift at the highest level, new CEO, that sort of thing, you're not doing your job. It actually should be so embedded that any leadership would see that what you're doing is valuable.
That's exactly right. So the problem with the way that a lot of corporate social responsibility or corporate citizenship initiatives have evolved is that they're the whim of a CEO or the CEO's wife attended some benefit and came back in and thought, oh, this is a good idea. We should throw some money at it. And not to say that they're not contributing to good causes, but in a financial downturn with a leadership transition, those things will just go away. And the organizations and the communities that might have benefited from that giving are left out in the cold. So what I want to see is companies investing in projects that are linked to their business that will be sustainable over the long term.
One of your manifesto items speaks, it seems, directly to people coming out of business school filled with idealism. Revolutionary change is transformative, and that's great, but incremental change is good too. How do you reconcile the two of those?
So I came into BP right out of business school, really idealistic and energetic and thinking I'm going to change the world. And a lot of the corporate idealists that I spoke with for my book did too. But we've realized that the day-to-day is pretty small and it's pretty incremental. And there are these moments of opportunities for transformation. Some of them have contributed to new industry initiatives that you know are actually going to move a whole bunch of companies around the world at the same time. But the day-to-day, these small steps look pretty small. So things like launching a new corporate policy or signing on to an initiative, those things to the outside world seem really small, but a lot has to happen inside the company for those things to happen. You have to get the right people aligned. You have to have made the case to certain departments. So that was actually part of what came out of the book in trying to reconcile the BP that emerged in the wake of the Deepwater Horizon disaster with the BP that I thought I knew so well, that I got to know in Indonesia and China, that was doing these really innovative, transformative investments in communities around those big projects, to try to reconcile those two, I realized that, okay, I did not transform the whole of BP, but I know I made a difference to those few hundred families that I worked with.
Has anyone ever told you you've sold out?
Oh, sure. I get that all the time. But talking to a lot of the corporate idealists, you need people within companies to be pushing for change. And you also need people outside protesting, banging on the door. We need people pulling every possible lever to make change happen. And some of those people have to be inside corporations.
Christine Bader is the author of The Evolution of a Corporate Idealist, When Girl Meets Oil. Thanks so much.
Thank you, John.
Erin Hobaugh, Pompton Lakes, New Jersey. Do your personal values and beliefs clash with the company's corporate culture? Yes, I believe in being honest and straightforward with the employees. That is not what is going on at all. The company seems to think that it's okay to lie to these people, even with their employment. That's one of the biggest issues I have.
The boss may be listening there, Erin. Here's a story from Hannibal, Missouri. Yes, I am pro-choice, working for an anti-choice substance abuse rehabilitation center for underprivileged women. The clash is resounding and deeply frustrating considering our clients. Another one from Meadville, Pennsylvania. I'm a Democratic official swimming in the pond of a Republican county courthouse, yet somehow we all get along. Message of peace there, world harmony. From Meadville, Pennsylvania. Share your story at 877-8MYTAKE or at thetakeaway.org. And while you're there, vote in our takeaway brackets for the greatest TV character of all time. Thanks so much for listening. I'm John Hockenberry. This is The Takeaway.